Hello and welcome to More or Less on the BBC World Service. We're your weekly guide to the numbers all around us in the news and in life. And I'm Tim Harford. A couple of weeks ago, we spoke to Dr. Natalie McDermott of King's College London about the new coronavirus. She explained the highly uncertain numbers behind the spread of the disease, and she told us that it wasn't a global pandemic. At least, not yet. A lot's happened in the last 2 weeks. More cases, more deaths, and the virus even has a name now, COVID-19. And strikingly, on Wednesday night, there was a sharp revision of the figures coming out of China, with deaths up 20% and cases up about a third overnight. So, first thing Thursday morning, Dr. McDermott came into the studio to tell us what was new.
The figures went up by about 15,500 cases and went up by about just over 220 deaths. And at first it was a little bit unclear why that had happened, and we're still trying to get the exact details of what happened. But it seems that the case definition in Hubei province and Wuhan for a confirmed case of COVID-19 has changed, and subsequently there's a lot more people being included within that confirmed case definition now. What we don't know is how many of those people were just in the last 24 hours, or if some of this is looking back over the last week or two and bringing in historical cases.
Do you trust the Chinese figures? Should we?
What we've seen over the last week has been a little bit confusing. When we see an epidemic start to wane and containment measures come in, we do start to see it sort of wax and wane a little bit, but usually around that peak number we'd been at of daily cases. And a drop of 500 cases in a day in 24 hours is quite a huge drop. So I became concerned that perhaps those figures weren't entirely robust, and there could have been many reasons for that. It may not be intentional, it might be capacity to test. Now that we've had this jump of about over 15,000 cases in 24 hours and a redefining, if you like, of the case definition, particularly in Wuhan and Hubei province, it suggests that perhaps those figures haven't been reliable.
Dr. McDermott was speaking on Thursday. 24 hours later, it seemed clearer that while the new definition had increased the number of cases, most of the sudden jump was reflecting an accumulated backlog. We also wanted to ask Dr. McDermott to answer some questions from listeners. For example, Ian, who has a spreadsheet that's causing him to lose some sleep.
Whilst the official death rate for the coronavirus is repeatedly stated in the media as being 2%, I believe that this is a false statistic. No one seems to have spotted that there is a time lag of between a week and 2 weeks, or maybe longer, from a person being reported as having the virus and that person dying. If, like me, you do a spreadsheet of the current growth rate in deaths projected into the future by a week and then by 2 weeks, you'll see a different picture emerging. The real death rate is somewhere between 6% and 18%. It's certainly not 2%. I don't want to scare anyone, but...
Hold it right there, Ian, because you are scaring someone, me. So I asked Dr. McDermott. She told me that Ian is right in principle, but wrong in practice, because his spreadsheet doesn't account for all the cases that are so mild they don't ever get reported. Once you adjust for that, the estimated death rate is much, much lower.
The calculation that he's doing, he's right. So you need to look at your number of deaths at the point at which they became unwell, so that your denominator, so your number of cases, is from that date, not from the point at which they died. And we know that it is taking maybe for people who succumb to the disease about 2 to 3 weeks on average for them to actually pass away. So obviously the case numbers we have at that point are much higher than they were when that person got infected. And Imperial College have just published some new figures looking at that, and they include that in their figures. So they've looked at what is happening in Wuhan amongst hospitalised patients, and they have concluded that actually, similar to what your listener said, the mortality rate of hospitalised patients in Wuhan is 18%. However, we're still missing that huge chunk of people who have a lot milder disease who are never even being tested. So they've then looked at the infection rate in people who've been evacuated from Wuhan, and then also the mortality rate in countries which have had exported cases and where there might be some ongoing transmission. And they have factored it all in together and concluded that overall, the mortality rate is 1%. but that is trying to include that big group of people, which is to some degree an unknown entity that never get tested because their disease is so mild they never seek any healthcare.
And last time we spoke to you, you told us that it was not a pandemic yet. Remind us what a pandemic is and tell us whether you still think it is not a pandemic yet.
So a pandemic requires there to be significant outbreaks on all continents and with ongoing transmission of disease in those continents. So we're not at the stage of a pandemic yet because we're not consistently seeing ongoing transmission on all continents. But I think we're probably not far off it being called a pandemic if we continue to see, for instance, transmission like we're seeing in Singapore, if we start to see that in other continents where there is definite localised transmission in Singapore now, then it will be classed as a pandemic.
And how worried should we be relative to SARS, to MERS? I mean, SARS, there's a big fuss about SARS, but in the end, we're all still here. Swine flu, that was bad. Or seasonal flu. I mean, where does this fit compared with all the other things that we periodically worry about?
SARS people were a little bit more concerned about at the time because it had much higher mortality rate, but it didn't have the same propensity to spread in the way that this one does. So it depends on what aspect of the virus you're looking at in terms of are you worried or not. People often look at the mortality rate and prioritise that as being what they're concerned about. But actually, it's how well the virus spreads that is harder to contain.
SARS, in the end, they were able to sit on, even though it was quite dangerous. I mean, bird flu, there was a type of bird flu that killed almost everybody, didn't it? But actually was very difficult to catch.
Yes. It's much worse, I believe, if you have a pathogen that can spread easily because containing it is difficult.
And we're in that situation with COVID-19.
Yes. So COVID-19 transmits much easier than SARS did because it transmits in the incubation period, so before people can be symptomatic of the viral infection. And if you don't know that you're unwell, it's very hard to take measures to prevent spread. So it transmits in that incubation period, which SARS didn't. MERS doesn't tend to. It possibly can a little bit, but not with the same, let's say, veracity that this one does. The mortality rate is lower than both SARS and MERS, but because it's going to affect a larger, much larger group of people, potentially in total, we will have a higher number of total deaths than we did from SARS. Well, we already do from SARS, but than we did from MERS that's been occurring since 2012. We will likely see more deaths if we continue to see the spread at the rate we are.
So is the model we should have of this that in the end we're all going to get it and what we need to do is work on treatments or vaccines because it's sufficiently contagious that it's just a matter of time? Or is that too fatalistic?
I think that's too fatalistic. I think we need to do everything we possibly can to try and prevent it spreading. And that's not just our public health authorities, that's us as individuals as well, like taking precautions. If we don't feel well, don't go to work.
Wash your hands.
Don't go on public transport and cough on everyone. You know, stay at home until you feel better. I think that we can slow the spread of it. And in so doing, we protect the more vulnerable people in our population.
Thanks to Dr. Natalie McDermott of King's College London. She was speaking to us on the morning of Thursday, the 13th of February, and when she spoke to us, the best estimate of the case fatality rate was around 1%. But of course, there is uncertainty about that, and the estimate may change as time passes. That's all we have time for this week, but please keep your questions and your comments and your spreadsheets coming in to moreorless@bbc.co.uk. We will be back next week, and until then, goodbye.